Leaders Against the Last Rays and the great Kennedy Park. But now that we have it, have you made any estimate of what senior citizen price like this would cost the state of Oregon?
Yes, we have less than $15,000 annually, probably based on what information we have on the subject of how the various age groups using the parks. It's based on some assumptions. Estimated $15,000.
Dave, I want to ask something. It's not as much to do with this. Well, two things. First of all, what's the status of the advertising budget of the Highway Commission? Parks.
Parks Division does not have an advertising budget as such. Travel information section does, over which I have no jurisdiction, and I can't answer that question specifically. I think there's a budget before the legislature as part of the Highway Division, yes, but I don't know the details of it. Right.
Another question on state parks. Is hunting allowed in the state parks?
No. Legally, it is not.
I'm thinking specifically, and it should not be in most cases. I think specifically one place, so Neatarns Bay, you had a large park, and you own all the land clear down miles beyond the park down the mouth of Neatarns Bay. It would be illegal to hunt on that land.
Under existing law, that's correct.
If the Game Commission contacted you, they're interested in opening certain portions of it for hunting during just some of the waterfowl.
We have had discussions with Game Commission and other hunter groups on the subject. There are some legal problems involved. We haven't resolved them yet. But there have been such discussions.
What's your attitude?
I think there are times and places on lands classified as state parks where hunting under carefully controlled conditions would probably not be much of a problem.
Further questions, Mr. Talbot?
This bill, first, apparently does not limit the privileges granted to the residents of the state of Oregon. Any person over 65.
That's the way I understand it, yes, sir.
Any non-resident could afford a fee of $1 to take advantage of this bill.
As I understand it.
Your objection would still be the same on ticket if you're limited to Oregon residents.
We've had some experience in limiting things to Oregon residents, and the federal government, who now contributes so much federal aid to us, reacts quite violently to this and does not allow it in essence. So I would think that you'd have difficulty restricting it to Oregon residents.
What would be a typical charge made for the use of a park for a older person who has a camper and pickup?
The camping fees vary with the quality of the facilities in individual campsite. A trailer site, which consists of a water, electricity, sewer, and hot showers in a building nearby, that's $3 a night. Another campsite is $2 a night, and it wouldn't have the individual facilities in the campsite. It would have showers nearby and firewood and a table and that sort of thing, but it wouldn't have a sewer hookup or electrical hookup necessarily. Then there's a primitive campsite for $1 a night. Most of our campsites are in the $2 category.
Do you have any possible means of estimating revenue loss?
Yes, we conduct park visitor surveys on a 5-year basis in some detail, and based on those surveys, from which we guess at how many of our visitors are in varying age ranges, and we work back from that, and as I mentioned earlier, somewhere in the vicinity of $15,000 probably per year.
$15,000 per year.
But it was there's also the development of a pass system for which we didn't develop an estimate, but that would be another cost probably.
That's out of the total revenue derived from that source of how much?
Between $900,000 and $1 million per year from camping fees.
Per year.
Per year.
Further questions?
Thank you.
I would assume that Representative Henderson would like to testify on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm sorry I wasn't here earlier to hear the entire testimony, but to clear up one point, as you will notice on line two, it's relating to the use of state parks in other areas by Oregon senior citizens, is what the bill calls for.
Where is that?
Line two.
Yeah, but it didn't say it in the bill.
No, it's not in the bill.
Well, then I would suggest an amendment to the bill, Oregon citizens.
Well, then, of course, what problems do you run into? Mr. Thomas suggested where there's the infusion of federal funds into these parks. Can you discriminate against the non-resident class of persons?
As long as, and this could be a legal question, which I would not want to imply that I could answer this, but as long as the state is charging, the state is establishing the charging for the fee on those parks, they should be able to develop it as to Oregon senior citizens at this point. I think, Mr. McPherson, you probably could witness on the legality, but I don't think you're good on that point. I might state that one of the big reasons for this House bill, not only do we desire to provide our senior citizens, some of those that are living on a set income, a means of, you might say it isn't a great amount, of relief for some type of entertainment for their use. There's many reasons why we came forth with this bill. Number one, to give them a privilege. Number two, the privilege being from Monday to Thursday with, of course, the legal holidays exempted. But also, we're facing, really, you might say, a case of maybe developing a constant pull with the parks. We'll keep the senior citizen off the road from towing his trailer or his camper on weekends, when usually our weekends are our heaviest traveled by those, the younger generation, if we wanted to care to refer to them as such. For safety basis, we attempt to take a look at it from the standpoint, would we enhance the use, more use of our parks for the senior citizens? Would we be providing for them a means of entertainment during the week when our heavy travel is met on the highways? Would we keep them off of the highways on the weekends that they would have spent their day at the park or their week at the park and have gone home for the weekend on a Thursday, keeping them off the roads for the other use? The fee of $1 to be charged for the permit would have to be set up in such a way that they would show proof of age of 65 or older, to allow them the special privilege. It is a special privilege, there's no doubt about this. But to me, for the senior citizen, we just can't seem to do as much as I'd like to see done, and this is just one means of providing them. Some of them, their only entertainment would be in the form of going to our parks as an outing.
I'm one of the sponsors on this bill this year, Jim, and I sympathize with it. In fact, if I had my way, I'd just, for $30,000 a year, which would be double what he says he does for $50,000, I'd just soon exempt out all the fees, you know. But there's some objection raised from the private park owners who don't really object to this concept of allowing the senior citizens some. But they do object to the state park competing with them, and that state parks will buy, by condemnation, the most valuable, high-priced piece of property that's available for a trailer park. Then they will, at sparing no expense, of up to $3,000 a site, build a trailer site, whereas a private man will spend $500 to $1,000. Then they will
lease out or rent out that site at rates that aren't below the competitive rates of the private park owners, not paying any taxes, not having to worry about anything else about complying. But this is the objection I'm receiving, that they're already being fairly competed with by the state, and that this will, because they're a great portion of the traveler and camper and the vacationer is over 65 and has a freedom to travel, they're going to miss that business even more. Do you care to comment on how we're going to get around that objection?
Well, I don't believe there's an answer for getting around that objection. Even with or without this bill or this act, they would still be faced with the same situation and being in competition with our state parks. I don't think the senior citizen would do anything except to first select even today our state parks as far as a place to stay. And I am in deep sympathy with those who are making it their business. And I think we'll always have competition. We have the competition from the standpoint many of them want to know why the state does not also advertise on maps the private parks as well. But on our advertising and promotional that we do have for our state parks, they list only our state parks. But I think this would always be there as far as the competition is concerned for the park areas. But again, I would bring forth for your consideration the fact that these are our senior citizens who have paid considerable amount of taxes in this state to help develop it. Their set incomes, many of them, and I would think proportionally, probably majority are on set income, and this is their one means of entertainment. Their income has not gone up along with inflationary prices as we know them today. They still maintain at that same level. This is just a means of, and your one point that you would like to see it erased for the senior citizens. I was in agreement until I talked to numerous senior citizens. They don't want something for free, for nothing. There would be many of them probably would not even make application for the 65 or older. What my concern is right at the moment for the minority group of people in the senior citizen classification, that the extra dollar and a half that they might save by going in and taking a $3 slot, or the extra dollar might be the money for the gasoline involved to allow them to traverse to the coast to one of our state parks and have an outing for Monday to Thursday.
Further questions?
Thank you very much, Jim.
I'd like to explore with Mr. Davis. Do you want to be play legal counsel on this? What's wrong with allowing this just for Oregon residents and not for out-of-state residents?
We got into that situation recently in a proposal to provide pre-registration or reservations in parks. Originally, we started off with a program to reserve park spaces for Oregon residents. We were promptly notified by the Department of Transportation that in view of the federal government's contribution of up to 90% in the acquisition and development of these parks, that it was contrary to the federal constitution to provide benefit to Oregon residents that was not provided equally to residents of all states because of the, I guess, equal protection of the laws and the fact that the federal money was involved. So we were threatened with the removal or being out of conformity and losing federal funding in all future projects. And we had to rescind that order at that time.
If that's the case, to be consistent, we wouldn't be able to charge out-of-state hunting and fishing licenses because we receive a good deal of federal funds for hatchery purposes and for Dingle family and a bunch of other federal funds come to both the Game and Fish Commission.
Well, I would
shouldn't suggest that.
I would suggest, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, anybody want it? Thanks. House Bill 1616, we're gonna back up again. Bob, I'm sorry, sit down again. Brains?
1616.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 1616 is of considerable interest to me in that some time back I called together a meeting of Chancellor Llewellyn, Superintendent Dale Parnell, Floyd Stearns of the Education Coordinating Council, and others to discuss the educational opportunities that were being provided in all of the state institutions, including Hillcrest, McLaren, OSCI, and the state penitentiary, because our educational programs, to a large extent, have grown through the years, and we have not utilized the expertise of the educational people. I had asked that they study these programs, which involve the first grade through the college, to come up with a program that for the improvement of these educational programs in the various institutions. For that reason, I am in favor of the concept of House Bill 1616, but I see some problems in it that I would like to suggest some amendments. First, I think that it would be unwise to make an absolute requirement that this action be taken. I would rather have it that it be one which is permissive upon the agreement of the Corrections Division and the State Board of Education, in order that the transition can be made as it can best be handled. Since there is also a bill in now which is transferring to the superintendent of public, or the Board of Education, both the blind and the deaf school, the special schools, and I think it would be unwise to move too fast. I do think that it should be permissive. I think it should not include just Hillcrest, but McLaren as well, so that if this study, which is underway now, should come up, and in which the State Board of Education and the Corrections Division are both participating, that in the event the study would indicate that this is what should be done, that it would be possible to do so both at both McLaren and Hillcrest, but it would that would be under agreement of the two. It would make it then possible to consider some of the other problems that do exist. I am a strong believer in coeducation in these two institutions, and to transfer just Hillcrest and not consider McLaren could create some problems in that area. So I think that it included both, and if it were permissive, that we would certainly support the legislation because we have been involved in this study already.
Would it perhaps be wise to also include the State Board of Education or the State Board of Higher Education, or are they even involved?
Well, they would not be involved in Hillcrest and McLaren. They certainly are involved in OSCI and the Oregon State Penitentiary. And if all institutions were included and it were permissive, then they should also be included there, because we are hoping that through the cooperation of all the agencies involved that we can greatly enrich our educational program in all of these institutions. So if you added the Penn and the Correctional Institution, then the State Board of Higher Education should also be included.
Further questions? Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Representative Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Representative Larry Perry. I'm representing Lane and Benton counties. and I'm the chief House sponsor on House Bill 1660. Would you like me to go through the bill briefly, or do you...
No, I cut it down pretty well. Unless someone has questions, I think not that complicated. What did you... Go ahead.
The advantages that I saw, let me go back a little bit. 2 years ago, a very similar measure was presented to the legislature. And at that time, I sat in on the hearing and was impressed with the idea that the Hillcrest school would do better with the under the Department of Education. Some of the advantages that can be cited quickly, one is that the state standards of the Board of Education, I think, would be more closely met if the school portion of Hillcrest Institution were with the were under the state board. A study done of the school at Hillcrest by Professor Erickson at the University of Oregon indicated that no classroom there would be considered standard under the, if they had to be judged by the State Board of Education standards. And there are some people here who can back that up. I've asked Mrs. Hall from and Mr. Jarvel from the school to come by, and they can give you some specifics on that if you're interested. A couple of other advantages I can see going this route are that students would not see their educational requirements as part of a penal system. Another one is that the State Board of Education, of course, has as its primary function educating youngsters, whereas the Corrections Division has as its primary function custodial function. And so the advantage there is, I think, fairly obvious. And that's not to slight the Corrections Division. I understand that they do as good a job as could be hoped for. As a matter of fact, I went through their school out of the state penitentiary as well as having been through McLaren and Hillcrest. And I could see some improvements, was told about some improvements over the past year. Finally, I'd like to read a paragraph from a letter that I received from Edna Goodrich. Edna Goodrich is a she's a superintendent of the Purdy Treatment Center for Women in Washington, and she led the troops for this sort of change in Washington when she was with the Maple Lane Girls Correction School there. This is a reference to what happens to teachers when this change comes about. In Washington, they went the route of contracting with the local school district rather than having the state board operate the school. This bill provides that either could happen. Her comments, affiliation with the local school district has certainly changed the image of teachers in the institution. When teachers are part of a local school district, they participate in all the educational programs, conferences, meetings, state, national levels, etc. This is desirable because institutional school personnel need to get away from the confines of the institution or they become too institutionalized. Teachers at Maple Lane are very active in the local state national education association, which give them good professional image. Institutional teachers in the state have also benefited from better salaries and better working conditions, which makes recruitment of outstanding teachers possible. And last comment in this letter I'd like to cite is that before the affiliation, when the school was within the Corrections Division there, it seemed that the educational budget, which was included in the institutional budget, too often ended up low man on the totem pole. I think the case might be made for that again with Hillcrest here. I had called Mrs. Goodrich and asked her to write concerning this change, and she's fully endorsed either going the Oregon Board of Education route, having them run the school, or having it contracted with a local school. I did not want to get into a situation where we would say one or the other would occur, but we'd rather leave it up to the Board of Education.
Question? Do you have any objections to Bob Davis' suggested amendments making permissive instead of mandatory so that they can, in view of the fact that he said he was in favor of the idea, but then wanted to dump all of it, and to add McLaren Correctional Institute and the penitentiary?
Well, I talked to Mr. Davis yesterday, and asking him to go down and testify. And he noted the same thing in our conversation that he noted here. I put in shall, if the Board of Education wished to have it come under its jurisdiction or willing to, for two reasons. One, I thought it should be on that condition that the Board of Education would willingly take this as an experimental willingly take Hillcrest and try and work with it. I didn't want to say shall if the Board of Education didn't want it. Secondly, I thought we better say shall or it might never happen. So that's why it was drafted. In my conversation with Mr. Davis yesterday, I was got the impression that he was very supportive of the concept and that such would probably occur if he is in a situation to make it occur.
Representative McPherson,
had you talked to Mr. Davis prior to the introduction of the bill?
No, I had not.
Had you talked with anyone at the State Board of Education?
Yes.
Well, did you have reason to believe they would not accept the bill?
No.
Then if this should pass, you would have no objection to us couching the language in Section 1 of 50 terms.
Such as what?
Correction provision shall transfer the jurisdiction and responsibility of the educational program of Hillcrest School Board and the State Board of Education. Period.
I'd have no objection to that. We do have Mrs. Gubser, if I asked to come over, also with the dealing director with the situation, and she could answer that. But I talked with her prior to the
if we found any language that is in this measure, we walk away upon a cure with it. It's either a good idea or it's not a good idea. And we've left an act unaccomplished if we walk away with this language.
Unless we can assume that Mr. Davis will move in that direction. We have, in effect, if we change the language, then we place it in his hands.
Other questions?
Mr. Perry, you were talking about, I believe, no classrooms were inadequate, were adequate or very few. Whether fiscal implications to transfer to the State Board upon taking it, say, none are adequate to raise the standards and the Corrections Division not having money.
No, I don't anticipate if the transfer is made that the State Board is going to go out there next year and build a new facility. But there are some standards that I think the State Board would insist on, or at least work toward, perhaps giving it priority where that is not the case if the primary function of the governing body is custodial.
Who would pay for this upgrading of standards?
If we're talking about physical structure, of course the State Board will pay for it.
Corrections Division.
The measure calls for the budget applied that would go towards Hillcrest to be transferred to the Board of Education. So it seems to me that Ways and Means could appropriate whichever way they could appropriate the money to the Board of Education to do it if they didn't sign it.
Thank you very much, Len.
Thank you.
Let's go to House Bill 1657.
Chairman, may I ask?
Go ahead.
Somebody directed to amend this that concept?
Well, why don't we save this for the work session? I want to bring this up. We have two more bills and decide what we want to do to get the amendments drafted.
Mr. Chairman, would you check?
She's already testified. So we're morning. Are there any more questions we want to call? Paul back. She testified earlier on this bill before you got her. She's with the okay, let's move to House Bill 1657. Representative Hurd.
Okay. Chairman, members of the committee. As overworked as this committee is, I really hate to bring this particular bill to you. House Bill 1657, as the measure summary states, requires containers of certain volume which pesticides are sold or offered for sale have refundable deposit value of not less than 50 cents to more than $10. Requires after January 1st, 1972, containers to bear the label or stamp indicating refundable deposit value. This bill comes to you at the request of many farmers from my particular area. Judging from my mail, it is also a concern to farmers throughout the state. Farmers have told me that they are getting blamed for something that really is not their fault. What do they do with the container once it's been used? I think too that we should, in looking at House Bill 1657, we should look at the sponsors of this particular bill, and with only one or two exceptions, we see that the sponsors are representatives and senators who do not come from the urban areas of the state, but in fact from the agricultural sections of the state. I think that's an important point. I received a communication from the Marion County Grains Legislative Council yesterday. They indicated that they are very much in favor of placing a deposit on containers of pesticides, and they asked that the legislators be notified of their decision. This bill has been described as one that goes halfway, as one that is premature, as one that does not really get to the problem. And I received a letter from, a copy of a letter to Representative Irvin Mann, dated March 9, 1971, from William L. Knight, president of the Rambling Rotors Incorporated Commercial Helicopters of the Grand. And he has indicated that he has a solution to solve part of the problems with House Bill 1657, in that he would require a plastic container, that a plastic container be placed inside the can so that the insecticides and so on, could, or the pesticides could be placed inside the plastic container, and then the can could be recycled. There are all kinds of problems with a bill that certainly that has been introduced for the first time, as this one has. But I'd like to refer to a letter from Charles E. Henry, the president of the Oregon Agricultural Chemical Association. He says, at the present time, the chemical industry of the state of Oregon do not have standards established for the decontamination of disposal or disposal of containers of hazardous materials. They cannot be safely stored, buried, or burned with pesticide residues still present. This is exactly one of the points of this bill. This is why we're concerned about it. Another point he's made is that Oregon State University has a grant to work on this, but has been held up temporarily by local concerns in Southern Oregon because they've been storing containers there. We would anticipate the same local concern in the more populated areas of Western Oregon also, but at present there is no safe, approved way of disposal, and storage containers will leak after exposure to weather over a period of time. During the last session of the legislature, I was involved in a situation at Alkali Lake in Lake County, and I'm sure most of the veteran members of this committee will remember this situation. This involved industrial wastes. We heard many of the same arguments against the bill that the House Agriculture Committee passed out at that particular time, saying that that bill was premature, that a study was underway, and that many of the other arguments that the gentleman outlines in his letter here. And I would only submit that as of a couple of weeks ago, the Lake County Planning Commission has indicated to the gentleman who's in control of the private land in the Alkali Lake area that he's in violation of most of the planning requirements of the county. And this has been one constant source of trouble for the last several years since this was first put into effect in the Alkali Lake area of Lake County. There is no safe, approved way of disposal, and it seems to me that this is certainly one of the reasons that House Bill 1657 has been introduced, because we think that it's high time that there was a, or that there is a safe, approved way of disposal. I'm not sure when we talk also, as this gentleman does in his letter, that there should be an educational program. It seems to me like we've heard that before on other problems of, concerning the bottling industry, that they wanted 2 years ago an educational program, and I think we can see the results of that. This gentleman says that he asks, where will the storage areas be? The bill doesn't indicate this, and I say wherever possible they should be recycled, as the gentleman from LeGrand suggests. Another point of concern is the potential hazard of unknowledgeable persons or children who would collect these containers primarily for the refund that they can receive by turning them in, much like persons collect returnable beer bottles now. And certainly the result of not having any kind of regulation, or virtually no regulation, is they dump like we have down in Klamath County for containers of this type. Dumps are a problem. I've received a letter dated March 18, 1971 with a resolution from the Board of County Commissioners of Klamath County where they have attempted to give the dump site that is used for storage purposes in that area to the city of Merrill. Merrill has turned it down, and now they're trying to get to Oregon State University to accept it because they find that their insurance and so on doesn't cover them for any liability that might be incurred there. That's a problem. The bill is premature, we hear, but this is what we also, as I said, have heard about Alkali Lake, and this is a problem, and we're still trying to solve the situation over there. In the conclusion, Mr. Henry indicates that they would like to point out that a subcommittee, the Advisory Committee on Synthetic Chemicals and the Environment, has been seeking answers to pesticide container disposal problems for at least a year, and a logical plan should be developed from the study. This is the same thing again that we heard about Alkali Lake, the Advisory Committee on Synthetic Chemicals would come up with a working program, and it's just been one problem after another over there. So, gentlemen, as I say, 1657 might not be a perfect bill. I think it is a start. I don't know if it'll pass out of this committee or if it passes out of committee, if it'll pass the legislature. But I think it's high time that we start looking at some of the problems involved with this. And as I pointed out earlier, the sponsors of this bill are the ones who